Doku serijal.
Not just killed, but are tortured for days.
We've all heard about what's happening in South Africa.
Horrific and purposeful genocide going on against white South Africans.
What I'm talking about is the white genocide in South Africa.
What do we have to do to get that day public? You must die!
Full-blown genocide.
The internet is increasingly flooding with news about the white genocide taking place in the Republic of South Africa, a country of 58 million, where only 10% of the population is white. Approximately half of them are Afrikaners, descendants of mostly Dutch immigrants, who arrived in South Africa since the second half of the 17th century. The unsettling news about the white genocide mostly refers to white farmers, who are allegedly strategically murdered by the black majority, which has been in power since 1994. That's when apartheid, the regime during which the white minority overpowered all other groups, fell after nearly 50 years. During apartheid, the individual races, black, white, Indian and colored, meaning people of mixed race, were forced to live separately. The white genocide, allegedly taking place now, is rumored to be revenge over this period of oppression. News of the white genocide in South Africa even found its way to the Czech Republic. The subject frequently appears in online discussions regarding the migration crisis, where participants warn that we may expect a similar destiny. Since I personally lead the state campaign against racism and hate violence for several years, I have often been confronted with the situation in South Africa. Debaters suggest I go visit the white farmers, focus on their suffering and describe their martyrs. The information that comes to our country is full of contradiction. And so, at the beginning of this year, I finally saved enough money to take off for South Africa to find out what's actually happening there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Johannesburg, Tambo International Airport. It is 11:10 a.m. local time.
Several thousand Czechs emigrated to South Africa at the beginning of our normalization period, following the 1968 invasion of Czechoslovakia. Prior to my departure, I tried to find some of them, so that I could talk with them about the situation. Honza and Jiřina Šebesta are among those Czech families still living in South Africa. They live in a large bungalow in Alberton, south of Johannesburg. Hi.
Hello.
So I'm here.
That's great. You know, we have Czech radio on all the time.
I hear it. Country music.
I'm cooking sausage goulash.
Well, we were always rather adventurous, right? Well, partly, one just wants to get to know something else, and partly, we were together for a year by then. We wanted to have kids. We lived three generations in a single-room flat. So we just thought we would try our luck abroad.
No, a další.
And the other ones. We had friends with whom we played canasta. They had kids, three girls, and they also wanted to escape. By chance, some people from their building in Prague, Žižkov, were already here, a couple with a little girl, and they wrote letters about how fantastic it is here. So we decided with that other family to escape together, to go to Africa.
A tohle, prosím tě, to jsme si skovali.
And this, look, this we say, this is a historic document. Look at it. This was the place and date of issuing.
April 23rd, 1969. It's valid for all countries of the world until April 30th, 1974. And here, we got the exit visas. And here it says, entry, September 16, 1969. Passport control. At the time, it was still called Jan Smuts Airport.
When we arrived at the airport, it was being reconstructed. So there was this wooden shack, a huge wooden shack you walked through. When we came outside, there were buses waiting there that took us to various hotels. Because Jezina was pregnant at the time, they took us to a hotel for mothers, or soon-to-be mothers. And now it was noon, and there were black people lying about everywhere. And we thought, hell, they shot them all. We were terrified. But then they explained to us that it was lunchtime, so they always take naps.
Yep, when lunchtime comes, they simply sleep.
This is when I first came to work. After a month, I finally found a small cable company. I learned to speak the language a bit, and we put it together. And I can tell you that the black people liked us white ones there. Nobody was beating them. Nobody was, how should I put it, nobody terrorized them there. And they keep complaining about apartheid. Apartheid wasn't racism. Apartheid was simply the separation of races.
Because I mainly came to find out more about the attacks against white farmers, I asked the Shebestas what they think might have motivated them.
It doesn't always have to be black against white. That may or may not be true. These are simply criminal characters that go there to kill the farmer and take what's valuable. Perhaps they don't even do it because the farmer is white.
These people don't go to the bank every day. They have money there to pay for their black help. So the criminals come there, destroy them, shoot them, and loot the farm, see?
A few days later, I meet Trevor, an owner of an agency focusing on farm security and helping possible victims. Together we drive to the farm of Peter and Anna-Marie Bingeli, both in their 70s, who live near the city of Krugersdorp. Over the past 20 years, they grew flowers there. Recently they lost an entire harvest due to an extensive fire and decided not to farm anymore. But the fire was not the only disaster to affect the lives of these white farmers. 14 years ago, they were victims of a violent attack, during which Peter nearly lost his life. Despite still carrying the deep trauma to this day, they decided to remain on the farm.
Hello, Peter.
Good afternoon.
Our daughter came home late and she phoned and said the gate is open, so she wasn't sure if everything is good at home. So I put on the lights and I looked and everything looked fine. And then she came in and she said she's uncomfortable. She doesn't feel that, she feels there's something wrong. So we had a cup of coffee in the kitchen and... But she was nervous because the gate was open and there were sort of signs that somebody might be around. But in those days, we didn't have really the farm attacks like we have nowadays. So it was something new. And then she said, well, she's now going to bed. And before, I was in the passage, and as Peter opened the door, I just saw this man coming in and the shot, I heard the shots, and my first instinct was to run away.
We were attacked by five robbers. They were armed with firearms. And Yeah, I was shot 3 times. I was nearly lost my life. My wife, she managed to escape and disappear into the bushes.
So then I ran through the door, and we didn't have a fence here yet. So I just ran as fast as I could, and it's amazing how fast you can run if you're scared. And I was still now running, and I looked back and I thought I'm not far enough because the grass was still short. We didn't have these big trees, they were still small. And I ran up to about here, and then I fell in the long grass, and then I could see them running up and down on the stoop, and I just stayed there till they left in the veld. And yeah, so I was there until I saw that they took one of the cars and they took off, and then I came back. It was horrible. It was really not good.
And my daughter is severely assaulted. And thanks to... We're a close-knit community here. And we have Trevor, who's running a security company. And in those days already we had a radio network. And so help arrived fairly quickly. But it was a bit of a drama because an ambulance can't come here. You've seen the bad road. And they didn't find us. And so we had to be transported in the back of my car down into the valley to get to the ambulance.
One of the most visible international organizations discussing the farm attacks is AfriForum. It has nearly 250,000 members and is a foremost critic of the South African government. It blames the government for suppressing the rights of the Afrikaans minority and overlooking attacks on white farmers. This is why I arranged to meet Ernst Roots, the 34-year-old public face of the organization, at their headquarters in Pretoria, the capital. He has just returned from a campaign tour of the United States.
Farm attacks is a problem because there's four reasons why we say these attacks are unique and they are deserving of a unique counter-strategy. The first reason is the unique frequency, the rate at which people are being attacked and killed. The second reason why we believe these attacks are unique is because of the unique levels of brutality, the tortures that we see during these attacks. Not all of these attacks, but many of these attacks, we find that people are tortured for hours in the most grotesque ways imaginable. And the third reason is simply the economic side of it, is the consequences of farm attacks are far-reaching because we're talking about employers and highly skilled and trained people who are being attacked and killed. And if a farmer is murdered, oftentimes we find that production on the farm stops, that a lot of people lose their jobs, which has an economic component in terms of job creation. But it also has another component in terms of food security and creating food for the nation. So that's the third reason. And the fourth reason is the most important one, and it's the least controversial one. And that's just simply the fact that farmers live in unique circumstances. They live far away from police stations. They live far away from their neighbors. If you are attacked, some farms are so remote that if you fire with a firearm, people won't hear it. And that alone for us is sufficient reason to say that we cannot simply try to prevent these attacks the same way we try to respond to urban attacks. So there needs to be a unique counter-strategy, but there isn't one currently, and that's what our campaign is built on.
After one of my visits with the Shebesta family, I turn off the road near the train station in Loli, a small town south of Johannesburg. I know that there are farms down that dusty road. They appear a bit run down, and it's clear at first sight that these are not the rich white families. And so I happen to randomly meet farmer Charlotte.
it's too dangerous to farm. We're just enjoying the farm, but not doing anything on the farm, which will attract the criminal elements. You will also find that my place outside doesn't look like Sandton or Houghton, which is all the nice areas in Joburg. It looks quite normal, minimalized. The house looks from outside like it's, I don't have money. The reason for that is if you do start fixing things up and putting nice things outside, you become a target. All my life I grew up in town. So after my husband passed away, I moved to the farm.
So you were leading the farm alone, or you yes. had a new husband?
No, it was me alone, and I had dairy, and I ran everything on my own, and I took the kids to school. I had three children at that stage, and I stayed all alone here. Then it was quite safe to stay here.
What are you farming with now? Or
Nothing. No, there's too many complications. We gave up the dairy. We actually had a biodiesel farm, plant also, but that burned down a couple of years ago with a big fire that came from Clarksthorpe side. So we're not doing anything here. I'm remarried again, so my husband works at Coralbrick, so it's close for us to him to go to work. Yes, I can't see myself living in town again. These days, too dangerous, too many druggies and things like that. I prefer it, yeah. To be honest with you, so far I've had one incident many years ago where they broke into my house, but it was my own gardener and his son, so it wasn't like somebody from the outside. And my husband works with 500 black people who are all very nice to him, and they all know who we are, so we're not like intruders, we're like part of being here.
Do you feel scared a bit?
No. No, if it's my time, it's my time. I'm not scared. I'm not, you know, the propaganda making you scared and things get out of hand. You know, it's those type of things. And they know I'm not scared of them. I'm not scared of anybody. I don't care what color it even is. So I'm really not scared of them or anybody wants to come and try.
There is a horrific and purposeful genocide going on against white
South Africans. Leading to the genocide of whites in South Africa.
The stories of white genocide are spreading through alternative and social media. I repeatedly come across a page named Stopped White South African Genocide on Facebook, followed by 35,000 people. It publishes many emotional posts and links, sharing videos of crowds of black people that set buses on fire or raid shops. I therefore ask the admin for an interview, and they agree. Although rejecting a personal meeting and insisting upon remaining anonymous, they respond to my questions in writing, so I let a computer read for me. Why do they feel that the white genocide is actually happening in South Africa?
This is not a matter of how I feel, but a matter of fact. Babies are being shot at point-blank range. Elderly women are being raped and tortured by burning them with clothing irons and shoving anything from broomsticks to smashed bottles into their vaginas. People are being hacked to death with machetes, their heads smashed with bricks and stones, their throats slit with blunt knives. There is no end to the horrendous brutality with which white South Africans are being murdered. The solution is simple. White nationalism, self-determination, autonomy or Volkstaat. Whatever term you'd like to use. In a word, separation from black communist oppression.
Yet the mutual separation of races was already here. The country functioned on this basis from 1948 to 1994 until the apartheid government could no longer withstand both international pressure and internal protests and violence. Since the first democratic elections in 1994, the country has been governed by African National Congress. The ANC also produced South Africa's first black democratic president, Nelson Mandela. I asked Wade Davy, the deputy director of the Apartheid Museum in Johannesburg, about the essence of apartheid. She personally belongs to one of the oppressed groups, the coloured.
Apartheid was the official policy put into place in order to separate people from each other based on colour of their skin. There were segregationist kind of laws, not laws, official laws, but segregation that took place long before apartheid was made official policy. And apartheid was really the system of laws that were put into place to separate people from each other. And how you were classified determined the life you led in South Africa. And the classification process was a purely unscientific, random kind of process. It determined how you lived. It said to you that because you are a darker-skinned person, you can't have proper education. You can't have a house. You can't own land. You can't have certain jobs. You can only walk in certain, live and socialize in certain areas. That is dehumanizing. I think the main policy was really to disenfranchise the majority of South Africans who happen to be black from any kind of economic growth, any kind of economic involvement, to keep them on as cheap labors, to keep them away from each other, from the races, from each other, and to really treat them in a way that is that you wouldn't treat anybody. They determined what school you could go to, what education you could have, where you could live, who you could fall in love with, who you could marry. Everything, movie houses, dry cleaners, theaters, even entrances to shops where you had to go and buy something. There was a separate entrance at the back for black people. Just every single thing. Walkways up to railway stations and dry cleaners, you know. It was absolutely ridiculous. It was crazy.
When you become interested in the alleged white genocide in South Africa, you surely come across one name, Simon Roche. This 49-year-old South African is the face of the Sidelanders group. He repeatedly travels to the USA. He has lectured in the European Parliament and is a frequent guest on programs, particularly in alternative media. Sidelanders warn that the apocalypse is imminent in the form of an explosion of violence and have thus prepared a crisis plan. This includes the creation of a safe zone for white people. Hence, the members of this organization regularly exercise, as well as train in various fighting techniques. So I take off across the South African landscape, and after 7 hours behind the wheel, arrive in the quiet town of Vanderkloof in Northern Cape. That's where Simon Roche lives. Simon?
Bertha, the journalist is here. Sit down. I will put the kettle on for cool. Some coffee. Would you like coffee?
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Cute dogs.
Thank you.
They don't seem very dangerous.
This guy has bitten about 110, 115 people.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
It didn't bite me.
Hmm? No, I didn't think he would.
Given that I'm about to visit one of the most visible South Africans in this context, I expect him to live in a large house with appropriate security system. To my surprise, I arrive at a small, shabby, white and green bungalow. No cameras, no electric fans, actually no fans at all.
When I arrived here, I was kind of surprised, I have to say, because when I saw your videos, some interviews with you, I have a feeling that the country is dangerous or there is some big danger happening. Mm. But if I come here and if I come in front of your house, you don't even have fans.
All over South Africa, you will see that. Fences and walls with electric fences and barbed wire on top and razor wire and spikes. But there are some towns where crime has not come in so much. And thanks God, Vanderkloof is one of them.
I mean, you have a small house, so you have three dogs, is it?
Yes.
Right? They are your alarm then.
Yeah, they're my alarm. They're my alarm. But they're my friends, really. I didn't get them for alarm. If I wanted real alarms, I would have got big dogs. Kill it! Kill it! Kill it! Kill it!
Okay, all right.
All right. Suidlanders. a civil defense organization constituted under international law to prepare specifically for a crisis in South Africa, which we are quite sure will rupture or fracture along racial and ethnic lines. It means Southlanders, but in fact there isn't really a good Afrikaans translation for Southerners, so it kind of means Southerners, or people of the South. We can see the trajectory, the ballistics of the state of South Africa, and we believe that in the end there must be a crisis, and that we should prepare for such a crisis. Because any major crisis in South Africa, because of the nature of the society, will end up being an ethnic and racial crisis. It is just the nature. This is a violent, dangerous society. We know what is coming. We do not have the means to defend ourselves, but we will, by the grace of God, find the means to defend ourselves. We are not naive. We are not people who have not experienced violence. We are not people who don't understand what we say when we say we are going to defend. We know what that means. It means that our blood will flow into the soil. We know that it means that our children's blood will flow into the soil. We are going to sacrifice our own sons. And we know and we understand what that means. We are those people. You can call it living in fear. You can say whatever you like to, with love. My reaction to the threat is a mature, sensible, intelligent reaction to the threat. I'm not going out and killing black people. I'm not refusing to pay my taxes. I'm not committing rape. I'm not damaging the electrical system.
But you said you will fight until the last drop of the blood, so you would die anyway in the end.
Yeah, but I must... The point is not to die. The point is to defend what is right. The point is not death for death's sake. Well, I might as well commit suicide this evening. Come on, Lucas.
No, I'm just asking things that you said. So I
yes,
just
but the, because, the because point. Surely you understood.
You somehow.
But I wasn't saying that we want to die. I was saying we will defend something. We will fight to the death.
And many people will
because
die,
that's how much
said.
We believe. Yeah, of course, yes, of course. We're saying we're staying. Knowing that people will die because we are standing and fighting and dying for what is right. The principle is standing for what is right rather than running away.
So they were just scared all life long and then they will die?
No, not all life long. This threat didn't exist 30 years ago.
But for example, if you are 20 years old, then maybe.
It doesn't mean I can't eat nice food.